Hey guys, welcome to Tales from a Butterfly podcast. I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Sometimes caterpillar, sometimes butterfly, but always striving to make it through life's many metamorphoses with my faith intact. With this podcast, I hope to encourage anyone that is going through life situations, no matter what they are, that have left you feeling like you will forever be a caterpillar in the cocooning stage, having to continually shed your skin while fighting to get free from any chains that are holding you back from your transformation. I want to tell you, keep your faith in the transformer, believing that just like the butterfly, when you come out, you will be a thing of beauty who is not afraid to fly. So come on, my butterflies, let's fly. You're listening to episode 80 of the Tales from a Butterfly podcast, titled, You Don't Have to Be the Best One, but the Chosen One, Lessons from Jackie Robinson. And I'm your host, Taria Shondell. So let's get into it. Hey guys, thank you so much for sticking with me and coming back and downloading episode 80. Now, I'm just going to jump right into this episode. Again, episode 80, titled, You Don't Have to Be the Best One, but the Chosen One, Lessons from Jackie Robinson. Now, for many of you guys that have, you know, that are subscribers and have listened to all other 79 podcasts, I thank you. And anybody new, welcome. And I want to just talk about how much I love doing this podcast and creating this content. It's something I've always wanted to do in terms of communicating, but I never thought it would be in the form of a podcast, mainly because years ago, you know, we didn't have podcasts. So discovering them and then being able to do one and just share and talk and interview has been one of the biggest blessings in my life. And I truly believe I'm fulfilling part of my purpose and what God, you know, would have for me. Every time I sit down behind this mic at home to interview, or when I travel to go interview and the mic gets hooked up, I just slide in the chair and I feel right at home, like I've always belonged there. And I get a sense of peace and excitement and just joy, and joy in talking to who I'm getting ready to talk to, or when it's just me solo, you know, and I feel like I'm having a conversation with just the audience. And I just really, really love doing this. I really, really, truly do, you know. But however, as with anything that you feel like you're gifted to do, or that you love doing, or that you're a natural for, there's always thoughts sometimes, thoughts that try to creep up. And if you're not careful, don't cast those thoughts down. Those thoughts, especially the negative ones, can begin to take over, and you'll end up manifesting the very thing you were afraid would happen in the first place. You have to cast down imaginations and make up in your mind to believe that you're doing what you're supposed to do, and that God's got you in doing what you're supposed to do. But for me lately, you know, in the back of my mind, in the dark recesses, you know, those parts of the mind, I know for me that I don't like to acknowledge, you know, that it's there. The part that feels the most vulnerable, you know, that I don't like to share. I don't like to necessarily share my vulnerabilities. As I've said before, I have no problem being transparent all day long. But it's when you have to become vulnerable, that's when my challenge comes in that I'm working on. So, you know, in those dark recesses of the mind, again, the parts that feel vulnerable, I felt like lately I've been hearing the whispers of the words, you know, you're not the best at what you do. Anyone can talk. There's people that enunciate better. There's people that have a better vibe. There's people that have a better pitch, people that have a better tone. Taria, you're not the best at what you do. And I'd have to cast these thoughts down. And then I would, right after that would come, you know, there's better ones than you. There's others with higher download numbers, much higher than yours. You know, your position keeps changing on the iTunes chart. The goal to be on the iTunes chart is the lower you are, the higher your podcast is ranked. And then week after week, to see it fluctuate, and then to see it keep going up for the last 3 weeks when I've wanted it to go down. Those whispers that there's others out there, Taria, that are better than you are, and you're not striving to be better than them. Why is that? And it's funny because these thoughts came in the middle of when I was trying to work on an outline for a podcast episode I wanted to do for Black History Month back in February. So again, I started working on this episode back in February, and I've been working on it since. And we're now in what, March 18th? That's when I'm recording it, March 18th. And when I was working on it in February, I was literally trying to take it in a different direction. Notice I said I was trying to take it in a different direction. I truly feel like God dropped this in my, the subject in my spirit, but I was taking it in the direction that I wanted it to go. And so for a time I stopped. I just stopped working on it. And for the last 3 weeks, I'm telling Corey, I'm going to record because I don't want to get behind. I'm going to record. But I just felt stuck. Like I had to finish this one. And I even had ideas for different ones. And I'm like, well, I'll work on them and just save this one, because it's not Black History Month anymore, even though we should be celebrating our history every month. But in my mind, just another trick of the enemy. Well, we're not really celebrating it right now because it's March and it's Women's Month. So I'm going to wait. But something just kept nagging at me. And again, it's an episode about Jackie Robinson. So I had stopped working on it, and I went to church yesterday, and I was in church and listening to our newly installed pastor, Pastor Barnes. And the message was absolutely amazing yesterday. And as he was talking, his message was on fear, you know, and allowing fear to dictate your destiny. If you're not careful, if you don't get that fear in check, if you take your eyes off of God and allow fear to take over, that could interrupt your destiny. And I realized that I had a fear of not being the best one, having the highest numbers. And so how could I be useful if I wasn't the best one? Because you think about it, in games, in competitions, what do you always do? You play to win. I know for me, I don't play for fun. And I know that may sound funny, but I was never one of those people that would say, let's play a game of Uno, or let's play a game of cards, or let's play a game of Hangman even for fun. No, if I'm playing you, my goal is to win and actually crush you. And just being real, who plays for fun? So even though this podcast isn't a game, but in this industry, in the media industry, you hear so much about it being a game, and it's a numbers game, and the better numbers you have, the better your podcast will be received. So all this was going through my mind, and I'm sitting in church listening to the message on fear, and I realized it was fear that had allowed me to stop working on the episode with Jackie Robinson that I was working on, because I was afraid of it not being my best. Again, of not being the best. So using other excuses. And it came to me yesterday that I don't have to be the best one, because I know I'm one of God's chosen ones. And there's a difference. Again, I don't have to be the best one in the world's eyes, because I know I'm one of God's chosen ones. See, I don't have to have the best stats or the biggest numbers, because God has chosen me and gifted me to do this. And because he chose me, he'll provide everything I need to continue and to not fail, all while making my mark and making a difference in the world, no matter what or who I'm up against. And honestly, no matter if I look different than what the world is used to, I don't have to go by the world's standards. I don't have to go by the world's standard of being the best one, because again, I'm one of God's chosen ones. And when that thought hit me yesterday, my mind immediately came right back to the very podcast outline that I've been struggling to work on for the last 3 weeks. The very one. I mean, it just came right back to me. Again, I don't have to fight to be the world standard of the best one when I know I'm God's chosen one. And I realized that God had been trying to show me this and tell me this through me working on this podcast episode about Jackie Robinson. God was going to use Jackie Robinson as an example to me that, again, I don't have to be the world standard of the best one because I'm a chosen one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to scroll back through time a little bit. So come back with me through time a little bit. Use your imagination. And I'm going to refresh your memory of Jackie Robinson, of who he was, what he did. And for some, maybe some of you that are listening, hey, maybe you don't know the full story of Jackie Robinson. So I'm going to bring him to you and bring his story to you. But before I go any further, I want to tell you the meaning of the word chosen. Now, again, the podcast title, you don't have to be the best one, but the chosen one. Lessons from Jackie Robinson. So the meaning of chosen. According to Merriam-Webster, the definition of chosen is one who is the object of choice or of divine favor, an elect person, and selected or marked for favor or special privilege. And I'm going to give you that meaning again. According to Merriam-Webster, the definition of chosen is one who is the object of choice or of divine favor, an elect person, and selected or marked for favor or special privileges. Now, for the meaning chosen, none of that has to do with statistics. There's no mention of numbers. There's no mention of any of that. It just mentioned that it's a person that's elected, divine favor, a person that has been marked or favored for special privilege. So now let's get on to Jackie. Jack Roosevelt Robinson was born in Cairo, Georgia in 1919 to a family of sharecroppers. He was the youngest of five children born to Mally McGriff and Jerry Robinson. When Jackie was 6 months old, his father Jerry left the family to look for work in Texas with the promise that he would return or send for his family once he was settled, but he never returned. In 1921, Mally, Jack's mother, received word that Jerry had died, but could never substantiate the rumor. So after struggling to keep the farm going by herself, Mally realized it was impossible. So she needed to find another way to support her family, but also felt it was no longer safe to stay in Georgia. Violent racial riots and lynchings of black people were on the rise in the summer of 1919, especially in the southeastern states. So seeking a more tolerant environment, Mally and several of her relatives pulled their money together to buy train tickets. In May 1920, when Jackie was 16 months old, they all boarded a train for Los Angeles. Mally and her children moved into an apartment in Pasadena, California with her brother and his family. She found work cleaning houses and eventually earned enough money to buy her house in a mostly white neighborhood. The Robinsons soon learned that discrimination did not limit itself to the South. Neighbors shouted racial insults at the family and circulated a petition demanding that they leave. More alarming still, the Robinsons looked out one day and saw a cross burning in their yard. Mally stood firm, refusing to leave the house she had worked so hard to earn. Now, with their mother away at work all day, the Robinson children learned to take care of themselves from an early age. Jackie's sister, Willa Mae, 3 years older than him, fed him, bathed him, and took him to school with her. 3-year-old Jackie played in the school sandbox for most of the day while his sister peered out the window at intervals to check on him. Taking pity on the family, school authorities reluctantly allowed this unorthodox arrangement to continue until Jackie was old enough to enroll in school at the age of 5. So in other words, that family was given a special privilege. As early as first grade, Jackie became known for his athletic skills, with classmates even paying him with snacks and pocket change to play on their teams. Jackie welcomed the extra food, as the Robinsons never seemed to have quite enough to eat. He dutifully gave the money to his mother. Now, his athleticism became even more evident when Jackie reached middle school. A natural athlete, Jackie Robinson excelled at whatever sport he took up, including football, basketball, baseball, and track, later earning letters in all 4 sports while in high school. Jackie's siblings helped instill in him a fierce sense of competition. Brother Frank gave Jackie a lot of encouragement and attended all of his sporting events. Willa Mae, also a talented athlete, excelled in the few sports that were available to girls in the 1930s. Mac, the third eldest, was a great inspiration to Jackie. A world-class sprinter, Mac Robinson competed in the Berlin Olympics in 1936 and came home with a silver medal in the 200-meter dash. He had come in a close second to sports legend and teammate Jesse Owens. Now, upon graduation from high school in 1937, Jackie Robinson was sorely disappointed that he hadn't received a college scholarship despite his astounding athletic ability. So he enrolled at Pasadena Junior College, where he distinguished himself not only as a star quarterback, but also as a high scorer in basketball and a record-breaking long jumper. Boasting a batting average of .417, Robinson was named Southern California's most valuable junior college player in 1938. Several universities finally took notice of Jackie, now willing to offer him a full scholarship for completing his last 2 years of college. Robinson decided upon the University of California at Los Angeles, or as we know it, UCLA, mainly because he wanted to stay near his family. Now, unfortunately, the Robinson family suffered a devastating loss in May 1939 when Frank Robinson died from injuries sustained in a motorcycle accident. Jackie was crushed by the loss of his big brother and his greatest fan. To cope with his grief, he poured all his energy into doing well at school. Robinson was successful at UCLA as he had been in junior college. He was the first UCLA student to earn letters in all four sports that he played: football, basketball, baseball, and track and field, a feat he accomplished after only 1 year. At the beginning of his second year, Jackie met Rachel Isom, who soon became his girlfriend. Still, Jackie was not satisfied with college life. He worried that despite getting a college education, he would still have few to little opportunities to advance himself in any type of profession because, I mean, let's face it, he was black and look at the times that it was. Now, even with his tremendous athletic talent, Robinson also saw little chance for a career as a professional athlete because of his race. So in March 1941, only months before he was to graduate, Jackie dropped out of UCLA. Concerned about his family's financial welfare, Robinson found a temporary job as an assistant athletic director at a camp in California. Drafted into the U.S. Army in 1942, Robinson was sent to Fort Riley, Kansas, where he applied to Officers Candidate School, which is OCS. Neither he nor any of his fellow black soldiers were allowed into the program. With the help of world heavyweight champion boxer Joe Louis, also stationed at Fort Riley, Robinson petitioned for and won the right to attend OCS. Lewis's fame and popularity no doubt helped the cause. Robinson was commissioned a second lieutenant in 1943. Known for his talent on the baseball field, Robinson was approached to play on Fort Riley's baseball team. The team policy was to accommodate any of the other teams who refused to play with a black player on the field. Robinson would have been expected to sit those games out. Unwilling to accept that condition, Robinson refused to play even one game. Robinson was then transferred to Fort Hood, Texas, where he faced even more discrimination. Riding on an Army bus one evening, he was ordered to go to the back of the bus. Fully aware that the Army had recently outlawed segregation on any of its vehicles, Robinson refused. He was arrested and tried in a military court of law for insubordination, among other charges. The Army dropped its charges when no evidence could be found of any wrongdoing. Robinson was granted an honorable discharge in 1944. Back in California, Robinson became engaged to Rachel Isom, who agreed to marry him once she completed nursing school. So now that was just a brief trip through the early stages of Jackie's life, just so you guys can see his background, see where he came from, where he started, everything that led up to him going in, you know, to become a Major League Baseball player. And in those early stages, at least to me, it seems like he dealt with the highs of being gifted, you know, with his athleticism, in pretty much any sport he chose to pursue. So he dealt with the highs of being highly gifted and the lows of how the gift was wrapped. He benefited from the highs of being gifted to do all of these things, things that entertained a crowd and things that everybody can't just naturally do, while still dealing with the lows of being gifted, of having a gift that was wrapped around black skin. You know, he was lauded and applauded for the gifts that he brought to the collegiate sports world, only to end up honorably discharged from serving his country because he refused to sit in the back of the bus when Army segregation had been outlawed, because once again, his gifts were wrapped around black skin. And yet he wasn't bitter and he wasn't using what happened to him as an excuse to not continue on to fight for his future. He didn't use it as an excuse to say, forget it. I'm always going to be down. I'm always going to be looked at this way. He continued to fight for his future. So now I'm going to move to the next part of his life. And this is where the bulk of the lessons that I learned from Jackie Robinson came in. You know, the early part of his life, and now he was willing to stand up to the Army and refuse to sit in the back, refuse to play on the baseball team, because if they had to play another team that didn't want to play with blacks, he would have to sit out. He refused all that. So I learned lessons in that part of his life. But this part here dealing with what I was currently dealing with about not feeling like the best and not feeling like I measured up. This second half of his life is where the bulk of the lesson for me came in. The first lesson was the way you handle adversity will either pave the way for you to break barriers for those coming behind you, or you'll end up watching others advance while you're still behind and enclosed in barriers. Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson, known as two of the greatest African-American baseball players, were vying with one another to be the first Afro-American major leaguer, only to watch rookie Jackie Robinson take the honor. You see, Branch Riley, the Brooklyn Dodgers manager, passed up the chance to integrate Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige into the majors in favor of Jackie Robinson. Ricky had long wanted to hire black players, both for moral reasons and because he believed it would increase ticket sales among the growing number of African Americans moving into the big cities. He knew that if the experiment failed, the cause of baseball integration would be set back for many years. Ricky's scouts identified Jackie, who was playing for the Negro League's Kansas City Monarchs after leaving the Army, as a potential barrier breaker. They thought Satchel Paige was boisterous, outspoken, and drawn to trouble, while Jackie was more subdued and led a normal life, leaving the Brooklyn Dodgers manager, Branch Rickey, to decide he would make a better case for integrating baseball. He thought it was doubtful that Satchel could have turned the other cheek as Jackie did, while fans hurled rotten food and racial epithets at him. Rickey also knew that Jackie had lived among and formed friendships with whites while growing up in Pasadena and while attending Pasadena Junior College and UCLA. Ricky knew that Jackie had a hot temper and strong political views, but he calculated that Jackie could handle the emotional pressure while helping the Dodgers on the field. Jackie promised Ricky that for at least his rookie year, he would not respond to the inevitable verbal barbs and even physical abuse he would face on a daily basis. So look at that. Here you have two other players, Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson, who had played longer. They had been in the game longer, y'all, had better stats. They're watching as Jackie Robinson, the rookie, who although was a great player, more importantly, he could carry the weight of what his gift would cost him. They're watching him advance into the major leagues to make history that would not only change his life, but the lives of other African-American players that would come behind him. He was willing to use his gift to make room for other gifted people to be able to have the same opportunity. So this showed me the true character of Jackie Robinson. He was willing to use his gift and talent, even though he knew it wouldn't be easy, even though he knew he would be ridiculed and taunted and his life put in danger, all while having to keep his cool. He definitely had to be grace, not just under fire, but he had to be grace in the fire. And it made me look at my gifts and talents, and I had to tell myself for about the 100th time that what has been given to me is not just for me, but to help others. And I can't let my ego and frustrations and fear of not being the best or being caught up in being the best get in the way of using my gifts to help advance the kingdom in its entirety, because that's truly what it's all about. I had to remember that. The second lesson I learned from Jackie Robinson's story was when it came to operating in my talents and walking in my gifts, sometimes the steps I have to take that look like I'm moving backwards and into the minors and away from my destiny are actually just preparing me for a destiny that, although it won't come without a fight, it is preparing me to be able to fight on and win in the majors, and especially when my uniform comes with a little more armor. Satchel Paige wrote in his 1962 autobiography that he always figured he would be the first black ball player in the majors. He said he was the one who fought to play against white players in the traveling game circuit in the offseason, and he was the one who beat them. Those major league owners knew I wouldn't start out with any minor league team like Jackie was, Paige writes in his autobiography. They'd have to put me right in the majors. That might have caused a revolution because the high-priced white boys up there wouldn't have had a chance to get used to the idea that way. In October 1945, Branch Rickey announced that Jackie Robinson had signed a contract with the Dodgers. He sent Jackie to the Dodgers' minor league team in Montreal for the 1946 season, then brought him up to the Brooklyn team on opening day April 15th, 1947, where he made history. So you see, Jackie went to the minors first. He was humble enough and willing enough to take a step that seemed like it was backwards because it would only eventually propel him forwards. So he made history that day when he was brought up April 15th, 1947 to the majors. It was written that Jackie pioneered the integration of professional athletics in America, and that by breaking the color barrier in baseball, the nation's preeminent sport, he courageously challenged the deeply rooted custom of racial segregation in both the North and the South. Branch Rickey first told Jackie that he would have to wear an armor of humility. I'm going to say that again. He had to wear an armor of humility to survive his initial test of major league experience. And Jackie knew he would need it to ward off the racial intolerance and abuse that was certain to come from fans and players. At the end of Robinson's rookie season with the Brooklyn Dodgers, he had become National League Rookie of the Year with 12 home runs, a league-leading 29 steals, and a batting average of .297. In 1949, he was selected as the NL's Most Valuable Player of the Year and also won the batting title with a .342 average that same year. As a result of his great success, Jackie was eventually inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1962. Coincidentally, the same year that Satchel Paige, who thought he would integrate first because his stats were better, the same year he wrote his autobiography. And the third lesson that I took from Jackie Robinson's story, the attack on your gifts doesn't always come from strangers. Sometimes they come from the people that you just spent a season with, the ones that are supposed to be on the same team as you. But there will come a point when God will turn it around and your detractors will eventually become your defenders. When the announcement was first made to the Dodgers about Jackie coming up to join their team, several of Jackie's new teammates had banded together and signed a petition insisting that they would rather be traded off the team than play with the black man. Some of the players were openly hostile to Jackie, while other teammates refused to speak to him or even sit near him. It was made abundantly clear that racial tension existed in the Dodgers clubhouse. However, the team's feelings about Jackie, a black man playing for them when they played the Phillies, became really apparent. And it kind of turned it around. The Phillies manager, Ben Chapman, led his players on a mortifying, nonstop tirade of racial slurs. And if that wasn't enough, some Phillies pantomimed as snipers, aiming their bats at Robinson as if they were rifles. It all reached near traumatizing proportions for Robinson, and it stunned even Dodgers players who were borderline on whether he should belong or not. Branch Rickey later recalled that Chapman did more than anybody to unite the Dodgers. When he poured out that string of unconscionable abuse, he solidified and unified 30 men. And from then on, the Dodgers became a unit, and Jackie took them all the way to win the pennant. So, looking at that, already people talking about Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson and their numbers, their stats being higher, but yet Jackie Robinson was the one that was integrated. And then he gets integrated knowing that he's got to battle people that don't look like him because they don't want him there, only to have to turn around and have to fight the very ones that are supposed to be riding for you and supporting you on your team. You know, not only did Jackie have to fight opponents, people on the other team, but he had to withstand the hatred and the open vitriol from his own teammates, only for him to keep going, to keep his armor of humility, and for his teammates to turn around and end up backing him. And not only did his teammates back him, he didn't say, "I told you so." He didn't taunt them. He didn't make them work for his friendship. He graciously accepted the apologies from his teammates. He didn't go into victim mode and remind them of what they did to him. He didn't do that. And again, to me, that speaks volumes to his character. I mean, can you imagine? Again, you're already having to fight the opponent. Imagine being on a team. A team supports each other. That's why it's a team. That's why people say there's no I in team. They support each other. So not only do you have to go out and fight the opponent and try to beat the opponent, but then you got the people on your team that are supposed to support you, not wanting you there, fighting you. But it took the attack of an outside team, the Phillies, to unite the Dodgers because they had had enough. And Jackie remained humble throughout. Not saying he didn't angry. Of course he got angry. Of course he wanted to fight back, but he had made a promise to wear this armor of humility. And eventually, like I said, God turned it around and the people, his detractors, soon became his biggest defenders. And, you know, that made me look at my life and want to get rid of any residual leftover anger or frustrations that I may have had with people who said they were on my team, but treated me as if I were the enemy or not as valuable as a player as they were because my stats weren't high enough or because I looked different than them. I asked God to, looking over my life, looking at what Jackie went through, I asked God to give me an armor of humility. Let me be able to fight and still be humble, still be in humility, still wearing that armor of humility, knowing that this is for a greater good. It's not just about me. And that also remembering that no matter what the other team thinks, no matter what my teammates think, because God will surely turn around in my favor because he chose me. So I may not have had the best stats, but he chose me because he trusted me with the gift. So I just wanted to encourage you guys the way that this story encouraged me. And I hope it did encourage you guys the way that this story encouraged me to keep fighting, to keep going, to not get so caught up in numbers and statistics. Because again, let me go back. Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson had higher stats than Jackie Robinson. They had played longer than Jackie Robinson. So to the world, they may have seemed better, but Jackie was chosen. He was chosen and trusted to be able to go in and break barriers, to change system setups, to challenge systems that have been in place for years. He was chosen. He was chosen to wear an armor of humility because they knew he could handle it. Because of what he went through in his younger years, him knowing how to live around white people, him forming relationships, him interacting with them going into the service, already having fought to become an officer in the service, standing up to racism in the service. So they knew that he was capable of wearing this armor of humility. His stats had nothing to do with it. He was chosen for that particular time. So I just want to, again, encourage all of you, all of my beautiful butterflies that are listening, and those of you who feel like you're still going through the metamorphosis, still in the cocooning stage, I want to encourage you to not focus on what it looks like around you. Stop comparing yourself to others and what others look like around you and where others' progresses are around you. You can't use the same scale that they're using to measure progress because God created you differently. Don't focus on how far you think someone else has come and how far you think you've yet to go, wondering if you're ever going to get there. You know, I was listening to a different podcast 2 days ago, and it was a young lady, and she's in this group of friends. And she said, there is a couple that's in this group of friends. They've been saving money for years, and they lived in an apartment that wasn't the best. Everybody else lived in cute little apartments, but they chose to stay and live in that apartment that wasn't the best, but they saved their money. They saved their money. They didn't go out splurging all the time. They saved their money because they had a goal. So people would come over. I mean, their apartment was so bad that they couldn't even turn on the light and use the microwave at the same time, or a fuse would blow in. The friends would come over and laugh like, you're still in this apartment? You know, this rug is ratty. This wallpaper is ratty. You need to get out of this apartment. You're making money now. You're on TV, because they're on TV. And they didn't. And now they're the first in their group of friends, even though they were, if you will, behind the other ones as far as where they lived and the luxurious vacations the others would take. But guess what? These two that seemingly were behind the group just went out and was able to buy a $2.5 million home, the home of their dreams. And now the young lady giving the interview said that it's created a pressure among her other friends, not her. And one by one, they're now all buying these big homes, some of them that haven't even saved like the initial couple. And she said, I refuse to let it pressure me. She said, everybody now keeps asking me, you're the last one. We've all bought homes. You're the last one now. Are you going to do it this year? And she said, no, I'm going to do it when it's time for me to do it. And that dawned on me too. Like, again, sometimes we're looking around. We feel like this person's ahead and this person is younger than me, but they just bought a brand new car, paid it off. Or this person just got a home loan and here I am still renting and you're feeling like you're behind. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're behind. It means, it could mean that you're right where you're supposed to be. Again, think about Jackie Robinson, who was signed to go into the major leagues. So you got Satchel Paige watching him be signed to go into the major leagues, only to turn around and he have to play a year in the minor leagues. Can you imagine? But he was humble enough to do it. And then a year later, boom, brought to the major leagues, even though he had already signed the contract, brought to the major leagues and made history. So butterflies, again, don't focus on what it looks like around you, on what others look like around you. Don't focus on their progress. Don't try to measure yourself up against them. Don't look at how far you think someone else has come. Stop wondering if you're going to get there when they got there. Them getting there seemingly before you doesn't mean anything, because you don't know what God has in store for them or what things he's working on for you to, again, break barriers and be a world changer. You don't know. So don't allow people to make you feel like you're behind, that your stats don't measure up. And when those thoughts do start to come, because we do have to cast down thoughts and renew our mind daily. So I'm not saying those thoughts won't come. Believe me, again, I was just in those thoughts. But when those thoughts start to come, I want you to think on Isaiah 41 verses 9 through 10 NIV. I took you from the ends of the earth, from its farthest corners I called you. I said, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. God's got you, butterflies, and I promise he will never let you go. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and listening to Tales from a Butterfly, episode 80. Now go to either iTunes, Blueberry, B-L-U-B-R-R-Y, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Spotify, or any other place podcasts can be found, and type in Tales from a Butterfly and subscribe to the podcast. And please rate the podcast by clicking on the fifth star for those of you with iTunes. You can do it from your iPhone or an iPad. It takes less than 2 minutes. Now, if you're already subscribed and you have iTunes, but you have not left a review, please go to your podcast button, click on it, scroll down to the search bar, type in Tales from a Butterfly. You'll see the Tales from a Butterfly avatar pop up. Click on it and scroll down just a little bit in the middle of the page, and it'll give you the opportunity to rate it 5 stars. And if you're feeling generous, if you could please scroll just a little bit further down and leave a comment. That could be really important. I promise it takes less than 2 minutes. Now, if you don't have iTunes, as I mentioned earlier, you can listen in. One of the ways is on blueberry.com and subscribe. B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.com. Now, when you type in www.blueberry.com and the landing page comes up, go to the search bar, type in Tales from a Butterfly, and the directory will pop up. Click on any random episode, and within the episode picture, it'll give you 4 or 5 different ways that you can subscribe. You can subscribe via email. You can download a free podcast app if you don't have one. If you have an Android, your Google Play Music store has free podcast apps. So you don't have any reason not to subscribe to this podcast. You know, the more ratings I get and subscriptions, the more visible the podcast, which in turn could bring in more sponsors. Also, head on over to TariaShondell.com. That's T as in Tom, A-R-I-A-S-H-O-N-D-E-L-L.com, to follow my blog by the same name, Tales from a Butterfly. And please, please, please share the episodes with your friends, your families, your coworkers, the cashier at Wise or Shoppers or Giant that you see every day, your dry cleaner. If they say, oh, I don't know what a podcast is, take the phone, hit the iTunes, you know, the little podcast app, type in Tales from a Butterfly and subscribe them. I think that they won't be sorry that you did. And please share the podcast on your social media platforms. I see so many memes and so many links shared. If you can share that, It only takes a click and a share to share the podcast. And speaking of social media, you can follow me on Twitter at TS Faison, Instagram TS Faison, and on Facebook at Tales from a Butterfly. And butterflies, stop comparing your gifts to others. Stop looking at how you think your gift matches up to others. Again, stop using someone else's scale to measure your growth and how far you've come. God has created you to be just that, you. And remember, stop competing to be the best one when all you have to remember is you are one of God's chosen ones. Fly on, butterflies. I love you guys, and thanks for listening.